The consummate professionals, Rich Honan and I, getting ready to broadcast, and we both gorge on nut-laden chocolate. So suddenly we're coughing as we come into the segment, so please excuse us as we march on for broadcast greatness. Our tech attorney, Rich Honan, pays us a visit with some thoughts on the so-called fiscal cliff, the players, their views, and what it means for us all. To help sort it out, we welcome Rich Honan with Phillips Lytle LLP. He is partner in charge of the Albany office, and it's always a pleasure to have Rich Honan with us this morning. Thank you very much.
Thank you, and thank you for the chocolate.
Yeah, you're very welcome.
And nuts.
it's one of the few things we have in the green room, so glad you enjoyed it. What do you make of the fiscal cliff? What can we say that hasn't been said?
And isn't that the thing that... This is the great way to deal with a crisis, right? First, you create a crisis, and then you make everybody so sick of it that they don't care at the end of it whether it gets fixed or not. They just want it to go away.
Now, can I just back up?
Yes.
Not to interrupt you, and I apologize.
No.
But because you said the word create the crisis.
Right.
And it seemed as though we were just waiting for, and the winner is, of the presidential contest, and then... We already had the Dewey defeats Truman headline waiting in the wings, which was, and now there is the fiscal cliff.
Right, because it's a created crisis, like most of them. We know that the way we report things now is just a series of crises, right? And some of them are real. Some of them are truly human, real, the Hurricane Sandy and things like that.
Yeah.
But this one... The media, and I think now the folks in Washington feel a need to go from crisis to crisis, and because I think it really fulfills everybody's needs. Because if you create a crisis and then you either solve it or nothing bad happens, everybody can take credit for having dealt with the crisis. And I think we've seen that with the debt crisis, and we saw that with tax increases. Now we're going to see it with this. There's this made up fiscal cliff, and it's not really a cliff. We're talking about this. It's more of a slope or kind of a ramp, a gentle rise. It's clearly handicap accessible. It's not truly a cliff. It's a slope that we'll have to fix sometime over the next 2 years, or else something might happen.
However, with that said, I mean, there is so much to this, and it has so many ramifications. There are so many facets to it that this is where it seems to be difficult to find consensus and common ground, because there are so many issues. Okay, well, we can agree on this, but yeah, what about this, this, and this?
Right.
And I think that's what makes it so troubling as an overall issue. But I again want to get back to the point, which is, we created it in the sense of we knew this was going to happen because we didn't solve the problem in the first place. So we put ourselves in this position of, we'll worry about that tomorrow. So tomorrow is here.
Right.
Now we have to worry about it. And it's sort of like it is the ultimate game of chicken as to who politically is going to... this would be a different conversation if Mitt Romney had won on November 6th.
Do you think so?
I think it would have been a different conversation.
I think maybe.
I think we would have still been having the conversation, right. But obviously the dynamics would be different.
Yeah, I think so. But there's two parts to it. There's kind of the wrapper of the whole thing, which is what we've been talking about, this whole idea of, how we kind of lurch from crisis to crisis. The folks in Washington, they're very much like, we all have that friend who's always losing their car keys. Right.
Yeah.
And, no matter where you are, oh, my God, I can't find my keys. And if it's a guy, he's like patting the pockets of his suit.
Right.
And if it's a woman, maybe, when they really resort to the, the dumping
of the bag. Yeah.
They create a crisis, and then, I found it here, right here. It was in the left pocket, not the right. And everybody kind of has this sense of well-being. Oh, we got past that. The keys aren't locked in the car, and we're not going to be late for soccer. And the world will continue turning. And these guys in Washington just keep losing their keys, and they keep running around. And you and I and the rest of America are saying, did you check your pockets? Did you check your coat? Did you leave them, with your phone? So that's kind of part of it. And which... really, as I say, it fulfills their needs, because as they lurch from crisis to crisis, we never really have a chance to sit and look at these people and say, wow, you just have a badly disorganized life, you know, and you're not really fixing anything. But on this, and then there's the substance of it, which you know, there are some interesting issues. You know, we're trying to close a budget deficit. We all know this. We're trying to reduce the amount of debt, and we're trying to do it in a somewhat measured way so that we don't lurch back into recession. You know, that in the right environment, that would be a really good topic because it involves both economy and, you know, fiscal policy. You know, how much of this should be tax, you know, revenue, you know, taxes, and how much of it should be cutting of expenses. You know, in the right environment, that would make a lot of sense. But by turning it into a crisis, we've managed to avoid all that. And now all we have to do is, by calling it a fiscal cliff, anything that happens short of us falling off the cliff. So as long as on January 1, the entire country does not become unemployed, everybody's going to congratulate themselves and say, we fixed it.
Y2K.
Exactly.
You know, it strikes me as though, and this, I'm going to play devil's advocate. And my character,
that's what I do for a living.
Yes. And my character's name is going to be Naive Joe.
Okay.
Here is Naive Joe. Naive Joe says, all right, it seems to be that one of the big issues now, when you hear John Boehner, the Speaker of the House, and you hear Tim Geithner coming out of the talks as the representative for the White House, and on the Sunday talk shows, that the issue right now seems to be the taxing of the wealthy,
right,
and what that tax rate will be. Now, all during the election, the president made his case as to why he felt it was important for people who make a certain amount and are above that threshold,
right,
to pay more.
Right.
He made that point again and again and again.
Yeah.
Naive on my point, because people voted for him. So with that, does there come an understanding that, okay, maybe the American people believe that as well, and why doesn't that play at all into the conversation?
Oh, first, I think it does. But I would answer that by saying, you know, remember, we are, you know, we're a representative form of government. And, you know, this is one of these times when, say, you're, you know, a run-of-the-mill congressman, congresswoman, and what do you do? First of all, yes, you listen to your constituents, but what if, and maybe there are some of these folks out there, what if they think that I'm being paid and I've been elected to make decisions, and I happen to think this is the right decision from a fiscal policy standpoint, even if it goes against my constituency? So that's the first thing, right? We're a representative government. There might be some people say, look, I know everybody wants to tax the rich, but I don't think that's the full answer. That could be part of it. But the other answer to it is, it's going to happen. I mean, the tax rates are going to go up. And now we're just, you know, you said over a certain threshold. So we'll argue about, where is that threshold? What are the exemptions going to be? When's it going to phase in? And, you know, we already kind of know the parameters, right? It's somewhere between, you know, $800 billion on one side, or, you know, depending on the percentages, I think they were saying it was going to be 20% of this will be increased taxes, and 0.25% of it is going to be cut spending. And so we already kind of know where we're going to be. You know, this is like a negotiation that we have all the time in the law. You know, you're at zero, I'm at 42 million. You know, I know where we're going to end up, you know.
And it's just getting there.
Right. And then it's just, you know, and the good thing about, one of the good things is, if you're a lawyer, the older you are, the quicker you get there, you know, because you say, look, do we have to go through all this? But politicians have to go through all this. They have to show their folks that, hey, you know, I fought for you. Remember, last thing, Joe, you know, it's not like 80% of the people voted in favor of tax increases. You know, the popular vote was, you know, a little closer than that.
Absolutely.
Right.
And my point by saying that was that you think if there is going to be any momentum, you know, you would sort of see it. And I don't think we really saw that, did we? Do we see that political momentum?
Well, you want to switch to the political. And, you know, I know we all have our different points of view.
Yeah.
I don't, if I were advising President Obama, okay, I don't know why he would want to do a darn thing to stop us from falling off the fiscal cliff. I think it's a huge win for him. I think that first of all, he knows that Congress is going to get blamed. He's not. Okay. I imagine, again, you know, I say this all the time, imagine if George Bush had come out and said, okay, here's how we're going to solve the problem by actually spending more money. I mean, the newspapers would have gone nuts. But he knows he's not going to get blamed. If, to the extent that there is a recession resulting, because they think, you know, the first half of 2013, there is going to be a recession resulting from the tax increases, you know, and the cutting of the spending, you know, the cutting of defense spending, he then shifts the entire burden of that onto Congress. You know, hey, the first 4 years, it was Bush's fault, and the second 4 years, it was Congress's fault, and, you know, I did what I could. I don't know why he would be in any hurry to avoid the fiscal cliff. I think the Republicans lost this argument, you know, 2 years ago when they set it up this way.
And again, naive, but maybe he cares.
I think he does care, but
you know, because you don't want
Well, tell me, Joe, what's going to happen when this fiscal cliff? When it, you know, and I've for the
well,
benefit of you,
with,
you know doing
I
the
agree.
Quotes.
Well, I agree with
what's
you in
happen?
The sense that it's, you know, that I don't think it's obviously as catastrophic as we're making it
out
to be.
I'm being more specific than that. What's going to happen to Obama's constituency when the fiscal cliff hits? The things that we know are going to happen right away are taxes are going to go up.
Right.
Okay. Certainly going to go up for the top 2%. All right. Right now, it's scheduled for a lot more taxes to go up, but we know that's going to get fixed. We know the taxes on the middle class are not going to go up. Good. We know that the biggest programs are exempt from the cliff, right? You know, Social Security and either.
We know that?
Yeah, that's the idea, and the bulk of the cuts is going to come from defense spending. We know that federal salaries are exempt from the cliff. And what do you're not going to run out of money because you have the $16 trillion debt limit. It's going to have to get raised. Nobody wants to get in that argument again. So if you truly think your job is to protect entitlements because you're trying to protect, disadvantaged people and people who need them, and I think he truly believes that in good faith, then he's going to say, look, we have the money, and if we don't have it, we'll print it. And we'll borrow it because that's what we I'm not doing anything that Ronald Reagan didn't do and that George Bush didn't do, you know? And so I don't think anything's going to happen to his constituency. And I think the Republicans, you know, probably figured that out from day one and, you know, they're going to have to topple at some point. I think that's one of the reasons why he said, hey, here's my plan. I'm going to actually increase spending. How do you like that? How do you like me now?
Yeah.
And, you know, and I don't think he wants them to agree because his goals... The goals of helping out people who he thinks need it are going to be served.
When do you think it'll be?
I think there might be. First of all, I think that as long as it's fixed any time before the end of, say, the first quarter of 13, as long as we have some clarity by the end, there'll be some bumpiness. You know, stock market up, stock market down. But I think by the end of the first quarter of 13, by the end of say March or something, I think people are going to want to know, well, what's my tax rate going to be?
Right.
You know, and it's going to hit people right away because there's been the payroll tax holiday. So I think you'll see a little bit of a fix prior to the end of the year, and then you'll see what they will call a global fix, but that will just be a kind of a bigger Band-Aid by the end of first quarter of 13.
I wanted to save some time at the end of our conversation here in the next 5 minutes or so to talk about that, about the impact of this. By many measures, the economy is getting better. It's strengthening in some quarters. We are seeing some numbers that show improvement. Not great improvement, not leaps and bounds, but some improvement. We are seeing some stability. And I wonder, is this a case of two steps forward, three steps back?
Is what the case of that?
Meaning that while we go through this can hamper whatever type of recovery it is that we're going through.
No, I think everybody would agree that, first of all, the recovery is going to be somewhat volatile. My question is still what recovery?
I think a lot of people can rightfully ask that question.
Yeah, right.
I mean, without a doubt.
Yeah, so that's the first thing.
But if we look at the numbers, we see there are some glimmers of hope.
Yeah, some, and then, in a month when they restate the numbers, then they'll be. But you're right. I think that the answer is it's been, in a way, we're being helped by it's such a tepid recovery, and it's so kind of volatile that this might drag it down a little bit. But it wasn't going at a rip roaring rate anyway. Yeah. And I also think that, you know, we're not the days of 4 or 5% GDP growth. I mean, those are, you know, we're never going to see that.
So you're a business leader and you are making...
When I'm not a business follower. Right?
When you're not a business follower, right. You are a business leader. So say you're a business leader and you are looking at the future and figuring out what it is that you are going to do and
I'm watching my money. I'm watching my spending. But I'm doing the same thing that every business has been doing over the last 5 years. You know, whether you want to call it trimming
the fat.
Meaning,
are you spooked by this?
I'm not spooked, but because of all the precautions we've all taken over the last couple of years, if you're a successful business, between expenses and between allocation of resources and efficiencies, I'm ready in case things slow down. I hope that they don't. And I'm going to, take some, and I'm going, and I have some optimism because I think most business leaders too, but I think we've all hunkered down, a lot. And I think we're going to stay hunkered for some period of time.
When you think about the overall situation, I guess this is where I'm going to take off my naive hat and put on my cynical hat now.
Okay.
And say, all right, we went through a bruising campaign.
Yep.
I would argue that most of them are. Okay.
Yeah, but, I would too.
This is any different. They're all bruising.
And they're all the most important election in the history of the country.
Right. They're all right. And so it's a bruising campaign. And you have a political divide that I would say, I do believe, is somewhat unprecedented. I mean, I think it is as bitter.
Oh, I agree. I think you have to go back to the 1860s and secession. I agree with you.
I mean, I don't think it's certainly not unprecedented, but I certainly for a long time.
Yeah.
And I just you think, man, you would just love to see that if there is a lesson to come out of the election, if there is a lesson that the American, if there is a something that the American people have said or have made a point, is that they don't want this happening. And by this, I mean partisan bickering and actually a, and maybe this is just too goody two-shoes, I don't know, but to have both sides sit down and logically and reasonably work out the issue.
Yeah, and I think that if your question is, have we passed the point of being able to do that? I don't think so. I really don't think so. I think, first of all, you have a second-term president that at some point is going to start looking towards, the legacy.
Yeah. I can't believe we haven't heard that in more. I mean, it was a murmur, but usually by now we start to hear about the legacy.
Well, you're already looking in the backseat mirror.
Absolutely.
And so that's why they're trying not to think about that. But yeah, I'd like to think that at some point serious people will get together and have the conversation. I like I say, this will get fixed. I don't think it's a crisis. I think at some point they're going to have that conversation. They're going to say, look, you can't solve the whole thing by raising taxes. And the country has already said we don't really want you to cut spending. So, everybody kind of see, and then it's just some maneuvering in there. And I think they'll fix it. If you're asking me, when are we going to get back to the environment where we could all sit down and say, hey, you know what? How can we really fix this? I mean, really fix this. Let's just have a closed-door discussion where you could say any politically incorrect thing you want. I think we're at least a couple of terms away from that. I really do. I don't think that kind of discussion on any issue is going to take place in this term, and it's certainly not going to take place in the next one because that election is going to be more bruising than this one was.
Right.
And, that's... I'll be happy when that day comes, when we could all actually, when the folks up there could actually get together. But I don't see that coming anytime soon.
When you think about that, it adds to the, the overall tenor and has tentacles on other issues, of course.
On all of them.
I mean, it's all interrelated.
It is. It's still the whole idea of, we're balkanizing. We're not coming together. You know what I mean? Whether you're in the 2% or the 1% or the 98% or the 99%, it seems like all these crises and all these issues are just serving to divide us into more and more different camps. Yeah. And there's so many issues, and you can't be in the same camp on every issue, right? And so pretty much we're going to end up with, you know, 320 million, right, different camps. And I'm hoping that, you know, cynical Rich, you know, says, I kind of see that coming. But, you know, naive, hopeful Rich says, you know, I still think that, you know, people are smarter than that. And the country as a whole is stronger than that. It's going to take a while, though. It's going to take a while.
We would love, obviously, we always love when you come here and talk about these issues. Obviously, we'll be talking much more about this as the days and weeks go on. Rich Honan is a partner in Phillips Lytle LLP. He is partner in charge of the Albany office. And for more information on the firm, you can visit their website. It's PhillipsLytle.com. That's LYTLE at PhillipsLytle.com.
Send your emails there.
Please. Rich, I want to thank you very much for, you were fine. You were in good form today, I think. Yeah.
Conciliatory.
Rich, thank you very much. And we'll see you in January.
Yeah, and have a good holiday.
And to you. Thank you. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.